Okay, so let's see. So first of all, this is, I guess, our second class here in the programming challenges thing. First question, how many people tried to have registered for judges? Okay, I hear most people have registered for judges. Okay, how many people successfully registered on the Spain judge?
Program challenges?
This is the one that's the UVA, yes. How many people successfully registered on the programming challenges? Okay. How many people successfully did anything on the UVA judge?
UVA
judge. How many people successfully did anything on programming challenges? Okay. Okay, it hasn't been working for more, I'm sure, than the last few days. So what happened when people tried? Okay, so let's first talk about the programming challenges judge, just so I know and can alert our
KM. I think the website was down.
You're saying the website was down for the weekend?
Yeah, I got it right after class.
I think I got it before the whole worm.
Oh, you think it's maybe worm related why it might be down? Or? Okay, so basically no one has successfully done anything. Did anybody who was on the programming challenges judge successfully or try to submit something to that? You did. And did anything happen?
About a day and a half, it's understood about finding the result.
And then?
I partially think that's a small problem with my code. The fact is, he doesn't time out the program yet. Like, if the program doesn't get to move, I'm feeling that he just.
Okay. Does anybody else have any problems on the programming challenges, Judge, or had any success or experiences whatsoever? What? Yours is still evaluated. So you're saying that you're in the same infinite loop as he is. I don't think that is your fault, by the way. Okay? It's possible that you have an infinite loop. I believe that part of the judge isn't working yet. Okay. So we will hopefully, I will let my people in Spain know that about the programming challenges judge. But fortunately, the UVA judge is hopefully working. How many people how many people have successfully submitted something to the UVA judge? Very, very good. Okay. How many people, by successfully, I mean that they got it right. How many people got it right? How many also got it right? Okay. That's good. How many people have solved all four of the problems so far?
No.
Okay. No one. How many people have solved three of the problems so far? Okay. No one. How many people have solved two of the problems so far? Okay. I see one waving hand, but that's not a firm. Why do you say you've solved two?
Well, the only thing I can do is debug the one today.
Well, not really. The judge says when you're done, debug it. Is it you who say when you're done, debug it? How many people have successfully done one as far as the judge is concerned? Okay. That says three or four. How many people have done none as far as the judge is concerned? Okay. So it's important that people try and get going on this, because somehow we're going to be, like I said, in a weekly flow where we're going to be giving new problems each week, and it's important that we make progress on a weekly basis somehow. Talk about the Spanish judge. The people who got one working problem, how many of the work people got the hailstone, what was the first one called?
3N
plus 1 sequence. Is there anybody who got anything except the 3N plus 1 sequence working? Okay? Any experiences people had with the 3N plus 1 problem? Yeah.
Basically, it tells me my program takes too long. It times out for 10 seconds, and I'm not sure why. I don't know if it's an efficiency problem, but I've done testing on my own thing.
Okay, you're saying your program's timing out and you don't know why. Okay, yeah?
Make sure you use an unsigned list, because if you use normal things, it overflows and negative numbers, and that one doesn't work anymore.
Well, okay, so let's. The question then is what does the specification say? Wait. So some people are having efficiency problems on the first one. That's what you're saying right now. Okay? Now, why might you or might you not have an efficiency problem? What does it say? Let me take a look at the book. And take a look. It might not be, in general, a bad practice to bring the book if you can. What does it say about the specifications there? The you know, what does it say here? Does it say anything about how long an integer it says it's dealing with? It says the original integer is less than a million.
And well, greater than zero.
And greater than zero. Does it say anything about what the longest integer it will encounter on its travels?
999.
What?
Would it be 999,999?
No. Well, okay, it seems to me that it might encounter... Can anyone prove that we have to encounter a number larger than a million in the course of our calculations? Yeah? You multiply it by 3 and add 1. So it's clear that you're going to have larger intermediate numbers. And this thing doesn't tell you anything at all about how long an integer you might encounter. Okay? So I would be... First thing I would be asking myself is it possible that I am using an integer that is too long? Okay, are you using long integers or?
Originally I had ints, and then it would come back with a runtime error. And then so I changed all of them to long, and I just after 10 seconds, it times out telling me it's too long.
Well, how long does it take on your computer?
I did like 1 through 900, like right 100 a million. It took about maybe 30 seconds, 40 seconds to get like whole.
You're saying it took 30 or 40 seconds to get to the whole. Okay, which should be the largest one, is what you're really saying. How many other people had it? How many people got it working without any heroic attempts at efficiency? Okay, did you do anything at all to try to make it more efficient?
Basically, the only difference was I found was I think I got into infinite loop because I didn't indicate how it was going to end. Because on Sparky, if I keep running until it's EOF, it ignores it. So what happens when I submitted, I made sure I changed it to EOF and it worked no problem. In my case, everything was integer. I didn't do longs or anything.
Okay. So, first, what language were you using?
I was using Java.
What language were you using?
C.
Okay. Did anybody get it? What kind of Java experiences did we have? How many people?
I got accepted, but the thing is, I find out if you use function calls in Java, it can take longer. You know, like if I take off the functions, I just use the calculations during the loop. I think it's going to be 2 seconds faster for my program.
So what you're saying is, if I understand it correctly, that in Java you had some 3n plus 1 function that computed, I guess, what was the length of a number or something like that. And then you called it from within something else. And you're saying that taking this program and removing the function call and just directly embedding it, you're saying that made it run how much faster? You take 2 seconds out of how much?
8 seconds.
Yeah. Okay. That's not such an unbelievable time difference that you should be necessarily worried about that. Okay, it seems to me. Okay? There's a question of whether... it would be bad if we spent a lot of time, let's say, distorting our programs for efficiency's sake. Okay? But when I have efficiency problems, I usually think about an algorithm rather than a code trick. You're now saying a code trick. Look, the compiler's too stupid. Let me fix that up. Is there some algorithm? Let's say we wanted to compute 3n plus 1. Okay, what might I do if I was having this thing going from 1 to a million? And we wanted to know, what was it coming?
0 to 1 to 6.
Okay. And we wanted to know for each one, how many steps does it take till it gets to the bottom? When you took 8 seconds on it, what were you doing? Were you going from 4i goes from 1 to a million, then go through the loop and compute what the length was? What is it that took you 8 seconds?
Well, basically, I just went through every number and then looped.
So from 1 to a million, you had an outer loop for 1 to a million,
yes.
Or a data input from 1 to a million. And you're saying, and for each one, you then computed what its cost was.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Would there be a faster way to do that calculation? So basically you say you computed it for 1, you computed it for 2, you computed it for 3, and so on. Is there any way that you could reduce the, let's say you ran into time trouble. You're saying you ran into time trouble until you loaded it in line. Is there any better other way you might have reduced the time it takes? A way to reduce the amount of calculation it was doing? Okay?
Could it be that some of the like lower numbers keep appearing for the line? So instead of having to calculate the lower numbers again, you could just find a way to find another reference for them.
So you find a way to reference the lower numbers, okay? How might you do that? That's an interesting idea. How might you do that? Okay, any ideas how you could take advantage of maybe some of the small calculations?
Could be a hash function.
Yeah?
Store the results in an array.
You want to store the results in an array, and this is going to be telling you what? The array, a value of L sub I is going to tell you what? The number of steps till you get down to 1, right?
No, I don't know if for 1 it's 0 or 1, I guess.
What's it for 1? Is it declared 1 or 0? How many steps does it take 1 to get down to 1? Say
one.
That in the book?
1. Yeah.
Is that what it, is that specified?
You count that number
yeah. At 1. Okay, you better count that. Okay, fine. 1. How many does it take 2 to get down there?
2.
So what would your 3n plus 1 function look like now? What would it do? Okay. How would you compute it now? So how would you compute f of n? Okay. If you had this table for the first I values, how would you use it to compute the value of the I plus first value? Yeah.
Checking the array to see if the values are even calculated. If it's not, do the necessary calculation, get the new result, and see if that value is already calculated.
Okay. So you want to say you're going to keep track of, how are you going to keep track of what's already been calculated? Okay. Is there a way to do that that's somewhat efficient here? What might you do?
Select the array to 0, type all elements to 0. And use that if it's equal to 0, that means it wasn't calculated.
So one way you could do this was to use a set everything equal to, let's say, 0, or, right, so if you say everything is always going to be greater than 0 in real life, right? So one possibility is you set things equal to 0, and then when you calculate a number, you test, is it done yet? Okay. If it is done, you, so suppose let's say that we want to compute the value of 100, and suppose 50 is done. What would we do?
Check
the 50th index and add. And how many steps it took? To, 10 steps it took to get to this point, to that, right? So that I claim is going to give you a smaller. If you do it this way, you're certainly going to spend less time in computation, correct? So it might be an interesting exercise to see how much less you spend this way. Okay? So that might have been the way that I might have tried to solve my problem, instead of doing what I would call compiler tricks. Okay? Although compiler tricks might be necessary and helpful here. Okay? Any questions? One reason to remember this example, though, is later on this semester we're going to talk about dynamic programming. And how many of you have ever seen or heard of dynamic programming? A few people. Dynamic programming is an algorithm technique that most people find very confusing, okay, and difficult to use. This is a very, very simple example of where we have used dynamic programming to speed something up. You want to compute, you know, sort of what is the count of sort of, you know, the length of, by our 3n plus 1 function, given some argument n. What we're going to do is we're going to speed it up by reducing it to a problem that we've already solved. Okay? And by doing it, reducing it to a problem that's already solved, we can then make everything fit. And by storing the answers to the ones we've solved. Okay? We're able to make this much faster. Does everybody see that that's what we're doing here? This may look like an obvious idea, but when we get the dynamic programming, you're all going to be lost and confused, okay? And it's the same idea that's what you're going to be lost and confused about. Any questions? Any estimate as to how much time this method should save us? Suppose you wanted to compute from 1 to 1,000,000, okay? And we're going to compute it by, well, first try to evaluate 1, then 2, then 3, then 4, and the dots. How much time should this method save? Could someone give me an argument that we're going to save half the time? But O of N, okay, well, what is N here? Well, how much time does this calculation take? Can you bound the time that this calculation takes as a function of N?
If it's even, number even is going to be N, because...
Okay. What's interesting here is, I don't know, I'm a good algorithm analyst, I don't know how much time it takes to compute F of N for a particular number, does it? Is this going to take, if N was 1,000,000, is this going to take 1,000,000 steps? No. Might this take an infinite number of steps? Could anyone prove to me that this does not take an infinite number of steps for any particular number? Okay. There's no law, if you think about it, that, I mean, without a proof or an argument, it's not obvious to me that some integer doesn't keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, right? You're multiplying it by 3n plus 1. That's going to make, if you have an even number, and I guess an odd number, you multiply it by 3n plus 1. When you do that, you're now going to get an even number. You divide that by 2, you might get an odd number, right? It might grow by 3/2. It seems to me that a hand-waving argument would say that some integer might grow by a factor of 3/2 each time, right? Does everybody sort of see how that, you know, in principle might happen, okay? So when you try to analyze this thing with a big O, I don't see any reason, you know, I don't see any way to analyze it for any particular integer, how much time it's going to take, okay? Does everybody see that? Okay? However, how many computations, if I do this trick of storing things up, what fraction of my work am I pretty sure I'm going to save? Okay? Can make any arguments about that, hand waving or not? What's going to happen on the even numbers? If I am evaluating it from smallest to largest, I claim every time I have an even number, I'm always going to go back, right? So on all even numbers, I claim my job is done. Okay? Does everybody sort of see that? So that's an argument that with this kind of an idea, you know, I should save a factor of 2 on the hand wave, and probably more. Because the moment, you know, every number is going to go jumping up and down on the sequence. The moment I got down below my original value, okay, I am going to stop, right? And so, how often will that happen? I say at least half the time it will happen very quickly and probably more. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay, that should be sort of believable. Okay, so we're talking about, we got motivated here by a Java efficiency question, where you had a problem where you're saying that when you called something as a function, it caused the Java to take a long time, right? That was what your complaints were.
A large number, or a large difference.
But was it that it was a large number, the fact that this was a, is this a recursive function that you had?
Yes.
Did you have it as a recursive function? Okay, so you said, I see, what you did was, read f of n, you said, if n is even, you said what? You said basically, return
1 plus f of 3x plus 1, or f of n over 2. Is that right? And then if otherwise, I guess else, you said return.
Wait, let me just think.
So isn't that what you did basically was f sub n was going to be basically if n is even, you're going to return 1 plus f of n over 2, else return 1 plus f of 3n plus 1. Okay? So your problem is not just that you're making a few recalls. You're making a large number of recursive calls. Does everybody sort of see that one? Okay? Is this how you did it with this inherent recursion?
Not exactly.
Not exactly. But did you do it recursively? Okay? So if you did it this way, I was going to claim that you're making a huge number of function calls. Okay? Not just a small number, but a huge number. So it's not like you're making, or if you did this from 1 to n equals a million, you're not going to be making a million function calls. You're going to be summing up the elements in this array. You're making that many function calls, right? Okay? So it might have been that this is a function that, I mean, recursion is in general a good thing, and it, you know, this is one that could very easily have been rewritten as an iterative function. Okay? And probably would have solved, that may be why you're getting into timing problems. Okay? So that this might be all that you need to remove, not necessarily a fancy dynamic programming. It might be that if you just made it iterative, the problem would go away. Okay? Any questions? Are there any tricks in Java to making function calls more efficient? Something like the equivalent, I'm not a Java person, to like make the equivalent of inlining a function? Does anyone know what it means to inline a function in C? Do we have any C++ programmers here?
Yeah? Yeah, it's you eliminate the essence of the function call. It takes the function and it embeds it into the method or procedure that was calling it. Java supposedly automatically inlines small methods.
Okay, is there anything that, does everybody, okay, so what was the claim? The claim is that if you look at how this thing gets compiled, whenever you do a compiler, you know, a compilation, whenever you make a function call, the compiler issues command that says, go jump to the subroutine, put your current state on the stack, and go there. Okay? For a small subroutine, and this is in some sense a very small subroutine you have in mind, okay? It sometimes pays to have the compiler instead take the code from there and physically insert it when it compiles it, to take the object code and insert it in the main loop, okay? And if so, then you save the time of jumping to the subroutine at the cost of making the program a little larger when you compile it, right? Does somebody see that you have a program here that calls a little subroutine 100 times in 100 places in the code? Even though your subroutine is maybe this big, you know, if you have to actually physically insert it here, it's going to double the size of the output program. But inlining is sometimes a good thing to reduce the overhead of function calls. Okay? And C, you can declare certain functions, C++, you can declare certain functions to be inline functions, right? And you're saying that in Java this happens automatically?
Yeah.
Does anybody know anything about that? Is that true or not true or might be true? Okay? So that may be one way to reduce this overhead. Would be if you were using a language like C, certain functions can be inline. Although recursive functions tend not to be good to inline. Why are recursive functions a bad candidate for inlining?
Because
the number of calls can increase tremendously, so that you increase the amount that will be compiled. You increase the length of the compiler.
So, in some sense, what would happen if we tried to inline the code? Let's take his subroutine, his main program, which makes one call to his main program here. Made one call to this recursive program. Suppose we now inserted the recursive subroutine here. What's going to happen? This recursive subroutine has two subroutine calls to it, right? So what if we inline it? Now we've got four of them, right? Every time we replace one, we're replacing it, we're getting two. It keeps getting worse and worse. So recursive subroutines, you can't inline, okay? Because somehow you're basically building the whole recursion tree, okay? So that's sort of a problem, because if we're inlining a routine, you wouldn't want to inline a recursive routine for just this reason, okay? Any questions about inlining or subroutines or how subroutines work or anything like that, okay? One of the things I want this course to be is sort of where we're discussing some of these mysterious things that you may or may not have learned in different classes and different parts of different classes and see how they sort of arise, okay? So this is why we see inlining is a good compiler optimization, and yet it can't work on recursive routines, okay? And we now understand why. Any questions? Okay? Any other adventures in getting this 3N+1 program working? Okay. Some other people came in late. Let's just double check this thing. How many people have gotten the 3N+1 program working? Okay. Very good. How many people have got any other programs of the other? Did anybody else get any of the other three programs working? Okay. Good man. Which one did you get? Or which one?
The four first problems, Minesweeper, Trip.
Good man. All four of them. Okay. You got them through the judge?
No, that's the thing. I could only find the 3N+1 on the valid and bad judge, and programming challenges was down on the weekend.
Okay, so wait, so let's think what this means. So you're telling me that programming challenges judge we agreed was down. You're saying on the other judge you were not able to find the problems for it?
Correct.
What happened when you submitted? So in other words, when you looked at them, if you looked at, oh my God, okay. Wait, no. Somebody's seeing something that's interesting that I hadn't realized. So what happened when you used the other, so the numbers that you should have been using, or I was hoping you were going to use, is, that on the problem statement, there are two numbers. The first number, the number on the left, is the one on the programming challenges judge. The second number, the number on the right, is the UVA number. Okay, does that clear up your confusion?
Yeah.
Okay, so submit them and make sure, convince me that in fact these numbers do work. There shouldn't be any doubts about that. Okay? But in fact, what you did point out to me that I hadn't seen before is that there's only one number listed on the first problem, right? So that has to be fixed, okay? That's what I have to fix since the book is going to the publisher in a couple of days. So, if anybody found any typos within the last, in the course of this reading, you have exactly 24 hours or so till we go, this final copy of the book goes to the publisher. So I need to know if there's any type of... Let me just write this one down, because this is something that will bother me. Okay. PC. Okay.
That's something I can't believe I got to overlook. You want a piece of paper?
No, I think I've got it on my napkin. Okay, thanks. So you're saying that you've got the four problems in principle written, and...
But you were only able to submit one. Now you know you can go and submit the other.
Right. Okay, does everybody understand what the problem was? If you look at the, what's it called? Every page in the book starts out with two numbers. Okay? The first number is the programming challenges ID number, which means relatively little, because in fact there's a web page
Actually, for I don't know if you've got program challenges, but I know at the UVA 100 wasn't 3N plus 1 also.
Right. Well, the reason is because on the first problem, 100 is the 100 is the UVA number.
Okay.
The programming challenge number is actually going to be something like 110100. But that's separate. Okay. So you got all four of them going. At least in principle, you think you've got them going. How much time did it take you to do the four of them?
It took like 4 hours.
4 hours. Okay. Good man. Okay. Now, I expect that there will be a wide disparity in how fast people will be able to solve all of these problems, okay, or to solve as many as you can. But the principle should be that if you're good and you know what you're doing and your approach is right, that is not an impossible job, okay? He hasn't got three of them working yet, and I'm sure that there'll be some debugging and some other stories there, okay? But this is what we would sort of like to have happen. That's the kind of thing I would love to have happen. Don't expect it to happen for everybody, but that's sort of good. Any other experiences on the UVA judge? So we had this recurrence, this inefficiency question with the Java recursive calls. Okay. How many people had problems with input in Java? How many people tried? Of the people who used the UVA judge, how many people used C? How many people used Java? Okay. Were there any other experiences using Java that we need to know about? Yes.
I also attempted to do the Minesweeper program. I tried submitting it, and I'm getting a compile error. Basically, one of the errors it sends back to me to my email is that I don't think it accepts interclasses with Java.
It does not accept what?
Interclass. Basically, when you create like a whole other class inside of another class.
I think that what you're saying is actually true. Is that something that anybody else? Yeah.
You can get around that by putting them in the class and then other class and just put it like at the end of the file. Like two blocks of class, two classes, and the same file.
That's how I have my program structured. I have the main class, which does all the bootstrapping and whatnot, and I have another class right below it. It's not inside of main,
it's outside of it.
It's outside of main, it's just in the same file.
I place mine like right before the final bracket. And
yeah, I know there were some things with inner classes in terms of like Java 1.2 and 1.3 and whatnot. So
that you could have them in two separate classes in one file.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what I'm hearing is, again, I don't know Java, so you guys have to humor me here. But basically, what I think what you're saying is that you got into trouble because you were defining nested classes. Is that what you're saying? And that what you're saying is you got around this by saying this did not really need to be nested there. Exactly. You arranged them as two non-nested classes.
Except that?
Yeah. So this is considered to be good. This is considered to be not good. Okay? And now, in principle, should the compiler accept this? Presumably, yes. Okay? Is this, in general, good programming practice? Quite probably, yes. I don't know, you know.
Well,
I mean, I don't know this.
The problem.
They only allow one file.
They only allow one file,
yeah.
But they allow you to concatenate classes, it seems, rather than have them be nested. Okay? So this is how you should do it. Does everybody understand what the problem is? Because if not, you're going to get it fall into this problem later. Okay? So this is one of the problems that I... In fact, I think we actually... I may even say something in here about... you know, in principle, I hope that as time goes by, they will get a better Java, you know, a compiler that is Java. But what does it say? It says it must be considered to be, what does it claim here about Java? Java programs must consist of a single source file. They are run, compiled and run as native applications using the C, the CJ compiler. Does anybody know what CGJ stands for? Yes. Or GCJ, whatever that means. It's the GNU Java compiler. Okay? So it's not a Sun thing. This is the GNU, the public Unix consortium. Does anyone know anything about this compiler? Is it a native compiler, or is it, you know, it may very well compile it actually to binary code rather than to some interpreted code, for all I know. Okay? So that I don't know. But this is not the standard, you know, the same Java compiler that you're used to using, and that's probably the source of some of the problems. Okay? Any questions? But because it's a GNU compiler, the GNU is the freeware, undoubtedly you can download this compiler and run it locally. Okay? Yes?
I downloaded it and I tried to integrate to SegWit environment, and I was never successful.
You were unable to download the SegWit environment?
No, I downloaded the SegWit environment, and I have to integrate it together, but I was not successful.
Okay. How many people out of curiosity on your computers, how many people like to run Linux? Do you have any Linux fans? Okay. Linux fans, I think, you know, I'm going to guess that the GNU people are happy being Linux people. So that's one thing that I imagine it may or may not be easier. Has anybody succeeded in getting this to run on a Windows environment, this particular compiler? It might be a good exercise to work on this and try to get it to go. Okay. How hard did you try to make it work?
I spent the weekend.
Oh, spent the weekend. Okay.
Last weekend.
Okay. Don't know what to say here. So you were trying to get it to run on what? Some version of Windows?
It's a SegWit environment, basically make like virtual desktop Unix. SegWit environment. You know SegWit?
No, I don't.
It's like virtual Unix. Over Windows.
I think it's an emulator.
It's a Unix emulator on Windows. Okay? So maybe the right thing to do is to get rid of the Windows and run Linux. That seems like a good thing.
I wonder for people who run Java, which compiler they use?
Well, the Java that they use is, which Java do people use here, you mean?
The new compiler.
Which Java did you use?
I use Forte, that's Sun 1 for Java. It's Sun's own IDE, and it comes packaged with the latest version of Java, 1.401.
1.4?
1.401, yeah.
I think it's just literally in the website, it's compatible only with Sun 1.1 or 1.2, and it's not accepting classes from a broad range of packages, but you don't specify which classes you're not accepting.
Okay.
So technically, if I submit any problems and come back with a compiler error, I wouldn't even know what was wrong.
I see. Such is life. Okay. In the sense that part of the problem is the judge is a Windows machine, is a Linux machine. Okay. This much I can tell you, and so it needs to be running a version of Java for that. As time goes by, the Java will emerge. The thing that should be noticed is the programs that we are writing here, for the most part, are going to be very short programs. Okay? So when you think of the object, in the world when you're learning object-oriented programming, and that's a good thing, the reason you care about object-oriented programming is usually to write large programs. Okay? You're building big systems, you're building classes, you're manipulating. This is one where the programs you're writing are basically one-shot things that are probably a few hundred lines long at most. What was the longest of the four you've written?
Max Sweeper. I got a little silly with that. It was like 1,000 lines.
A thousand lines?
I used a tree map to represent the minefield.
Okay, well, we'll deal with that one later. That's okay. That's a separate question. Okay, 1,000 lines was the longest.
I'm just guessing 1,000.
I don't know if it has been accepted yet, but I don't have 300 lines on it. I use a two-dimensional array.
Okay, you say 300 lines for Minesweeper. In general, this should be using, the program should be fairly short. Does anybody have a version of the Minesweeper program else? Okay, I'm very surprised it takes that many lines. Okay? But I may be wrong. We'll talk about that. That's my immediate sense. But the programs here, in general, should be reasonably short. Okay? And so a lot of the need for object-oriented programming is sort of not really there. You should not be defining big classes that you're going to be reusing. Okay? So you should be able to get away with these kind of classes. You shouldn't be needing too powerful an object library in general. You know, because the stuff that we're doing probably doesn't really demand it. Okay? So I expect people will eventually get comfortable with the subset of Java that they can use. But it will take some time to go back and forth to figure that out. Any other weirdnesses people had with Java?
The read line method that they gave us, it worked pretty well until I started to type in file input. Like the Minesweeper, I didn't want to have to keep typing the mines over and over. So I typed in the input to Java from a file. And when I did that, the read line method only tests for slash n, that's ASCII code 10 for the end of line. But when it reads a file, it gets ASCII code 13 and then ASCII code 10.
Okay. So what I'm hearing you say, let's explain this thing. Okay? So on the website for the Spanish judge, there is a 35 lines chunk of code designed to let you use what you call input things from standard input, right? And did you use that? Did anybody else have any problem using that? Okay. Now the problem that you're having here is the following. You said that when you were reading it from a file, okay, on your home machine, that little computer I'm seeing there, okay, you're saying that it came back with complaints that they were like line feed returns, whereas the other one, whereas that thing was only testing for, what was it, line feed?
Code 10.
Which is which, line feed or return?
Slash N, I'm not sure.
Okay. Can anybody figure out why this is happening? Okay. Yes. Right. This is Windows. And the judge is a Unix machine. Okay? So one of the classic file incompatibility things between Unix and Windows is how it interprets carriage returns. Okay? And how it interprets character codes. We have when we get to the third week of the course, we're going to look at character codes more closely. Okay? But basically, how does your text editor know what the end of a line is? If you think about it, you've got some file here. How does it know what the end of a line is and what you do with it? On some machines, it adopts the convention that there is a carriage return and a new line are two different things. So, if you're thinking about it, a carriage return with no new line could be interpreted as being just go back to here and start writing on the same line. A new line without a carriage return could be interpreted as just go down here, but don't go back to the beginning of the line. Okay? One of these systems, I'm going to guess it is Windows, says that to end a line, you have to end with a carriage return and a new line. Okay? That's what I think the Windows convention is, and please correct me if I'm wrong. The Unix convention is, you only want to go to the end of there is a new line character. Okay? And then I think it's interpreted as either one of those, or something like this. So, the problem is that on the judge, which is running on a Unix machine, this is perfectly fine. On a Windows file, when it sees a new line or whatever, how you created it on your text editor, it inserted both of these characters. Okay? And so the problem, the best solution to the problem is, of course, to get rid of Windows and to be running Linux. Okay? That would be my preferred solution. But if not, to be aware of this problem. Okay?
Yeah, you can just skip over the carriage return to code 13. And you just skip over it, the other one is still present. And that's a read line that it uses. Code 10, which Unix uses.
So what you're saying is, what was the problem? Where does this problem come in? This problem is coming in as you are using Windows, you are debugging it on Windows. You want to make sure that your program is correct. You are probably going to have to customize the read line function to make sure that it works properly on your home test files while still working correctly on when you submit it still works correctly on the judge.
I haven't submitted any of those yet.
Okay. It might be better to think that, if you're really going to have this problem, in an ideal world, you would write a read line that is portable to both, which may be occasionally tricky because some of the input files may have some weirdnesses. Again, in some of them, there may be some later on where characters which may not have all printable assets, and there might be other weird things in there, although I don't think there are. But somehow you may want to write for your own purposes the read line function so that it doesn't die on the Windows while still behaving correctly on Unix. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Fair enough. What evidence of this, by the way, when you're moving a file from Unix to Windows, or vice versa, I find that I get the sign that this is a problem is that I will get a blank line between every line on the input file. Because I typically will occasionally move Windows files to Unix. And when I do, when Unix thinks about it, there's always an extra blank line between every pair of lines. Because Windows was giving me carriage return line feed, whereas Unix was expecting just line feed. This is one of the problems in moving from system to system. Any questions? Okay? One of the things we have to deal with. Okay? Any questions? And again, the best solution is go to Linux. Okay? Any other issues with Java on the judge? Yes?
I want to understand all the input for all the problems will be compiled.
All the input for all the problems will be coming from standard input. There will not be any reason this semester you will be reading from a file. Okay? So so you don't have to worry about how you do file IO in Java. Okay? Or in C or any of these other languages.
What do you mean by standard input?
Okay. So the way that in Unix, files, data gets passed around. At the command line, how many people here have never used Unix in any flavor? Anybody here has never used any flavor of Unix for anything? Okay, no one will really admit it. So when you get the prompt, what is a thing I might want to do? Let's say that I want to, I'm sitting at my desk. I want to find out how many files do I have in my directory. Okay, I'm in a directory in Unix. All the problem files. I want to find out how many problems do I have. How would I find out? I would type ls bar wc. What does this mean? ls is a program that gives me the directory, all the files, the listing of all the names of the files, right? I guess like dir in Windows or something like that. wc is a Unix program that takes input from standard input and counts how many words there are in that file. And it will tell me how many lines, how many words, how many characters. Okay? So this first number here that got output would be the number of files in my directory. Okay? This is how I would do it. And the reason this works is because this program, WC, does not expect its input from a file. It just says, give me input from the standard input string. Okay? And that's what, it doesn't matter whether you're typing it in or you're directing it in. I could say WC indos test file. In Unix, I'm allowed to redirect input from another file. I can type it in from some program. I could even sit there and say WC, type these things, and when I end my file, when I'm typing, it'll tell me how many characters it's doing. The reason is that it's expecting input from a standard input string. Okay? And all your programs will have to do that. There is no file manipulation you're going to be doing in any of these programs. Okay? And, that's up to the convention you've got to get right. So once you get the input convention right using this block of code from Java or anything else, it should be good for the rest of the semester. Okay? Any questions? Any other questions about input? Okay? It's important that you get your programs
running and you try these things and get them going quickly. Because these first couple of programs, the first weeks, couple weeks of programs, they're much easier. The first week and even the second week, okay, are easier than what you'll be seeing later, because I'm expecting people are going to be running into these problems. I want you to overcome them. Any other questions about Java? Yeah, or anything?
I have a question about the output.
Yeah.
Are we supposed to all the data and then output all at once, or should it be output every case?
You mean for the,
For any of these
things.
Most of them seem like you want all the output at the end.
Okay, I will say the answer is you should output the output when it is ready. Okay? So I think the question here is, let's say like on the first problem, the 3n plus 1 problem. It has a bunch of input lines in line 1, and then it expects a line of output. The right model for you solving this program should be read a line of input, if it's there, compute what the answer is, and print it out. It's not there in the program. So you should not be storing up the answers here, the outputs, and printing it at the end. The easiest way to do this is probably going to be to print it on the fly. Presumably that's true for all of these examples. Because
my sense it says that it waits for you to put in that 0, 0 so that it's input is over.
Well, let's think what Mindstreeper says here. It looks to me that it's, again, what does Mindstreeper say? It says that, where does it say that, sample input there is a 0, 0 to end it. But I don't see why, I don't see why you have to wait for the 0, 0 to finish printing something. On the Minesweeper program, it seems to me 4, 4, I read the size of my array, I then read the next 4 lines, compute the Minesweeper answer, print that out, and then go on and see is the next case a 0, 0, if so, die, okay, if not, don't. So I don't see why you should be storing the output here. Okay, you should be reading a case and processing it. That should be the standard model here. Is there any reason why there's an exception there? Yeah.
When I looked at the program challenges in UVA, I looked at the output. They want you to store what the input is and then produce the output. That's the way it looked like on web pages.
Yeah.
But also when you're typing in a file, that's what will happen, regardless of whether you store it or not, that's what it's going to look like. So type in a whole thing of cases and then zero end it.
Yeah.
If your program is printing it as it processes, it'll still all come out, it'll take in all the input, and all the output will come out at the same time.
Well, I think what you're saying is that there's a buffering. Okay? So what should be the case is, you should not be, without question, you should be processing a case and dumping it out. There is no reason to store the output, it's just so you print it at the end. Unless that's easier for some reason, and in this case it's not. Almost certainly it's not going to be the case. Okay? Any questions about that? Yeah.
Send the output to a file?
The computer is sending the output to a file, but that's none of your business.
I know, but in that case, it doesn't really matter whether you store it or you print it at the same time because it's eventually going to just keep storing it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter when you when in your program you print it out. Okay? So since it doesn't matter, you should be doing the easier thing. Is that clear? Okay, is that clear? Okay. Again, what is the programming challenge judge going to do? I assume that what it's going to do is somehow inside the judge is going to take your program, do some cursory inspection to make sure that it's worth running. It will then compile your program. Okay, if it fails, it will send you back a message then. If not, it's going to take your compiled program, a.out, pump in their test file, and output store your answers to a file.
Yeah.
Then take this file here and run it through some test program that they have, where they take your answers, they take the right answers,
and they see whether it's the same thing. That's probably how they're going to test it most of the time. Okay? So, you know, so you should print that out the output when it's easiest for you. Any other questions? Yeah.
Yes, the 3N plus 1 question. I emailed that to you about this one. You see the other one, they have a 0, 0 to indicate that the input has come to an end. How would you know for that one when it's over?
Okay, so here's a problem that some people will encounter, which is over here, if we take a look at the two outputs, let's look at the Minesweeper problem and the 3N plus 1 problem. 3N plus 1, the output ends when we hit an end of file. The Minesweeper one ends when you get an input case that is 0, 0. Okay? So you have to be able to read input while testing for end of file. So if you go to, which page is it in this book here? On one of the pages, page 8 in the book, I give C, C++, and Pascal examples of how you read the input, testing for the end of file condition. So, you know, the file system of your computer provides some way of telling when have you reached the end of the file. In Java, I'm not 100% sure how to do it, but how do you do it in Java?
Just for end of file. It reads the input character by character. If the character code is less than 0, it's an end of file character.
Okay. So that's basically that's a reasonable way while it might work. That when you read something and it doesn't read anything, it gives you some kind of an error code. Okay, like if you're saying a return that's less than 0, you have to actually explicitly test for that. So basically what your loop for the first one might be, for your 3N plus 1 problem might be, read the two numbers. If I've got a negative code return, I've hit end of file, okay, and I should just die. Okay? Otherwise, process the two numbers. Any questions? Some of these are going to seem like silly issues, but I want us to resolve these kind of dumb issues now so we can talk about more enlightening issues later. Any other questions or comments about running life on the judge? Okay? Experiences people had. Okay? The 3N plus 1 problem, how many times did it... The people got it working. Working meaning the judge said yes. How many times did you have to submit it? Okay? Who wants to involve? Who got it working? That the judge said acceptable. Okay, how many times? One.
Eight.
Okay. Why did you think eight?
I was having submission problems with it. I was usually doing cut and paste, and I gave up and did it wait a day. I don't remember how it was, like the email address, and then redirected it to my file, and then at that point, it accepted it, no problem.
Okay, so let's listen to what might have caused submission problems. You're saying that you were originally doing cut and paste, meaning that you were sending mail. Again, I don't know what that means exactly. What does that mean?
What happened was I created a new message on my mail server, and then I just cut and pasted my program onto the message body.
I see. So you had some mailer thing, and what company's email are you using? What mail
Optimum account? Online.
What?
Optimum Online.
Optimum Online. I don't know what that means exactly. But is it a free or paid service?
Paid service.
Okay. Don't know if that's true. What sometimes happens is that when you mail in a program, if your mailer inserts some junk at the beginning and end of the message, or end of the message, it might fool the judge. Okay? So let me guess, you have a sign-off file.
No.
At the bottom of your messages, do you tell people who you are?
No. I was actually doing the begin code, end of code, and it was still giving me problems.
So one way to do it is, I talk in the book about having begin code and end code things. Okay? That's supposed to solve. So what? How did you solve your problem again?
What happened was, I don't remember when I was in Unix, I typed in the address and then the file that had my program in it.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the actual syntax was, and then when I sent it that way, it was actually, they were able to compiled, no problem.
So you think that when you did it on Unix, it was fine? Did you try to do it on Unix originally?
No. Originally, I was doing it through that. Then I tried doing it on Unix.
Okay. So again, another happy Unix customer. Okay. Let's file that one away. Any other comments about it? Anybody else to get it to work? The 101 to work with the judge. Did you meet a judge? Okay. Again, it's going to take a certain amount of frustration and iterations till you get it working. Yeah.
So I'm going to say, I don't know where I found it on the UVA site.
Yeah.
But there's an online submission thing that they're beta testing right now, so that you don't have to email it. You can just cut and paste into a web form.
That's right. There is. So they do have this.
There's some program challenges.
No, there's one on, again, remember, the programming challenges people are also the UVA, you know, remember, these are my Spaniards. They're all for the same people. But their new vision is that the people are going to be using this Submit-O-Matic, they call it, I like that name, the Submit-O-Matic interface, which is the over the web thing. Did you use that? Or?
Yeah, that's what I use.
And you like that?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
No problem.
So some people may prefer using the web form Submit-O. That's probably better for the non-Unix people, okay, would be my gut feeling, okay, so I can't, don't have to worry about your mailer messing things up or anything like
yeah.
that, okay, so this may be, how did you find it? I mean, it's there, I know it's there.
It was perfect. You give it your ID number, the problem you're working on, and you paste your code into it, it greets you right on the spot.
Okay, so, and how did you get access to this thing?
I was clicking around on the UVA site for a while.
Okay, yes.
It's just in the messages, like, on the home page, we see this, and they're like, web submission now available.
Okay, so you may want to hunt through that. That may be the way that you would prefer to do it. Okay, if it is, you know, some people may find that easier. Okay. Any other questions about the submission process or anything like this? Anything else about the how we get these things working? Yes.
If we got something correct on UVA, you'll know about it, correct?
Well, if you got something correct on UVA, it means that it was correct.
Okay.
And it will mean it will be correct on the programming challenges later on. At this moment, let's say I don't know about it. What I want you to do is to save your programs. Don't lose any of the programs you have submitted to the UVA site. Keep a nice directory of them. And I may, hopefully the programming challenges will soon work, and then you can resubmit it to programming challenges where I can mock, see what's going on.
Okay.
If not, I'll ask you to mail them to me later on in the semester. So don't lose the work that you have done, because I cannot easily retrieve your programs from UVA. I can hound these people and say, get it to me. But it's a nuisance for them. Okay? So we'd rather not do it that way. Okay? But I am told that the judging should be the same on both sides. Okay? So I'm confident that if you get it through UVA, you should be able to get it through the programming challenge judge once that gets going. Any other questions? Okay? Any other questions about submitting or any other problems? Okay, let me see what time it is now. 12:40, 29. When does class end? 12:40. So we've got about 10 minutes-ish left. 10-ish minutes left. Any other questions? We're also going to babble for those 10 minutes on something else. Okay? Let's talk a little bit about some of the problems. The 3N plus 1 problem. Let's just talk about it. My
hope is that what we're going to do is that one of the class periods will hopefully be devoted to discussions of what the theory is or what the problems are. That was, let's say, the Thursday class. And the second class will be, we'll discuss what happened when people started trying to work on them. And with any extra time, we'll talk about maybe the theory of some of these problems. So let's just take a look at this thing. Is there any conceptual reason? The first problem, remember, was cycle through and keep cycling until you, sort of get a number that's back down to one and count it. This one, I think, is conceptually relatively easy to program, although mathematically quite interesting. The second problem, the Minesweeper one. I heard one person said it took 300 lines, one person said it took 1,000.
123, it just felt like 1,000.
Well, 123 lines.
It just felt like 1,
okay, 123 lines is more like what I'm thinking about, okay? So what was this problem going to be asking? it was going to be saying that you're given a, what is the Minesweeper problem? You're given this array, and you want to ask yourself how many mines there are adjacent to it. Okay? Right? Basically, you've got the input thing with mines, and now you just want to count how many of these things you have. Seems to me the problem reduces to, you've got to have a read input, read in the matrix, which shouldn't be that hard, okay, except that you're working with character data, right? Does anybody have any problems, imagine any problems reading in character data? Okay, was that a difficult thing or a tricky thing? Because now you're reading in either blanks or stars. That's basically what this array is looking like. Or dots or stars. Okay? How did you read the input to get that working? Did you read it as a sequence of characters, or did you read it as strings?
I read it as a string.
You read it as a string?
I read it as a string. I read every line in
first. Okay, so you read it the whole array first before doing anything? Okay? That may or may not be, I don't know if that's necessary or not. Wasn't, okay, maybe desirable, I don't know. Okay, probably not. Okay, and then for each one, you're just gonna count how many cells there are. For each cell, you're gonna count how many of them from here to here. I see, the eight, you've got eight neighboring cells in general, right? That's what the problem is. You've got eight cells, and you have to count how many, from any point, how many stars you have in that cell, is that right? What is the easiest, this active testing those eight cells, are there any special, what makes that tricky to do, or is that more tedious? Does that make that tedious? Is that a large part of your 300 lines?
No.
Why do you have 300 lines?
Because I had to test it from the corner, because I didn't want to go out of bounds in my array.
So you want to go out of bounds.
So when it comes to the corners, so there's not eight boxes, there's going to be only three boxes.
So you have special, you say your special cases is what hurt you. Is there a way that we can get rid of some of these special cases? He's saying that, yeah, it was no problem leaving the center one. That's only eight tells. But on the here, I've got to check these, and there, I've got to only check those. Yeah?
Couldn't you just be in a bounds catch an exception ignored
since this is from mine? Okay, what possibility is to read out of bounds and catch exceptions? This sounds dangerous. Okay. This sounds like overkill. Yes.
It's within your square.
I'm trying to simplify code here. How do I reduce the, so that you don't have to actually program the special cases, yeah? What if I had a bigger matrix where on the outside of my array, I had no bonds whatsoever. I initialized this to zero, okay? Now what special cases do I have? I have no special cases. Every case, there are eight bombs. There are eight cells around me. If I want to count, so I'm not just going to be asking how many bombs are there for the inner matrix. Okay? And I don't have any special cases. Okay? Does everybody sort of see that? Okay? This is a clever idea. Okay? This is the idea of sort of a sentinel. Okay? I don't know if I talk about that in this chapter or not. Okay? But it's this idea that somehow you can remove the need for writing a lot of, how much code did you spend dealing with these special cases?
Probably about
50, 60 lines, okay, that could go away. And probably painful debugging, perhaps.
Yeah, but I got it.
Okay, but I got it, okay? But I didn't have to do that at all, okay? First of all, because I'm not programming it. But second, because if I use this, this Sentinel technique, there are no special cases. Okay, so this should work much more reliably, as well as simply, okay? Rather than saying, oh my God, in this case there are, sort of, I have to worry about this corner, I have to worry about the bottom case. according to you, there were probably 8 different special cases. Okay, and that could all get wiped out by just using this kind of a thinking. Okay, any questions about that? This is one of the things that I want people to be thinking about in here, this tactical question of how do we make programs simpler. This is why somebody is going to be able to do it in 4 hours, and somebody else is going to think, you know, many hours on one problem. Okay? It's a question of how do I simplify my task conceptually? And here, for the cost of a small amount of memory, you made your job much easier. Okay? Any questions? Any questions about the Sentinel technique? How do people here understand why the Sentinel technique works? Okay? Anybody who's at all confused by it or anything like that? This is an important way to think about things, to simplify your life. Okay? And we want to simplify your life. Yes, question? What is worse, using more memory or more operations? Well, it depends. Okay, there's 3 resources, as far as I'm concerned, when you're writing a program. There is 4 resources. 1 resource is the CPU time. 2 is the memory. 3 is your time. Okay, and 4 is maybe your program length. Okay? In general, unless there is a really big difference between 2 ways of doing it, we're not going to worry about CPU time here. I mean, that's not completely true. I mean, we are going to be looking for clever algorithms, okay, for certain problems. But for any of these problems, CPU time should not have been an issue. Okay? I mean, we got into this funny thing because you have this recursive call and the Java is very inefficient. Okay? But that we solved by making a little tweak to the program to get rid of the recursion. And suddenly your problem was fine. Okay? In general, we're not, you know, CPU time is, you know, CPU time either is important or it isn't important. If it isn't important, we don't worry about it. Okay? Memory use. A little bit of extra memory never killed anybody. A lot of extra memory did kill somebody. Okay? Are we using a lot or a little extra memory here?
Very little.
A little. You know, the size of the matrix is n squared. We're using 4 times n extra memory. Right? That's tiny. It's an extra, you know, for any reasonable n, that's 10% more memory or less. So, here we wouldn't worry about that. Your time is, in the context of these problems, very, very important. You have 4 problems to solve. You're busy people, supposedly. Okay? And, you know, I would be worried about trying to reduce your time is what's important. And how do you reduce your time? Well, one way is you program it in such a way that you reduce the number of special cases. You think about how do I come up with a clean, simple way to do these things. Okay? And he took a lot of time, not only because he had to program those 300 lines, but he also had to debug those 300 lines. And he had all those special cases, and I can just imagine how painful it was. I mean, I don't want to get too sympathetic here. Okay? But, I mean, it's clear that you've got to worry about, okay, here I've got to go look at this, and this. I don't look at this, and this. Here, I don't look at this. You know, you get a plus or minus 1 wrong, and suddenly you got troubles. Okay? So, trying to simplify things, trading a little bit of CPU time and a little bit of memory to making your program shorter is a big win. You can't have bugs in the lines you don't have. Okay? That's one argument here. Okay? So, it's an engineering decision, but in general, I'd be willing to trade a little bit of memory and a little bit of CPU time to make the program simpler. Okay? You know, you can go overboard on that. Okay? But I mean, in general, unless there's an algorithmic issue, okay, that's a better reason thing to do. Okay? Any questions? Any other questions about this particular problem? Okay? How much time do we have left?
Another couple minutes. On the trip problem.
There was this question about how many people have tried or thought about the trip problem at all? Okay, you don't understand it. Okay, do you guys have any you guys understand it, or?
Yeah, I understand what it was, but I had trouble with it. I couldn't figure it out.
So you couldn't figure out, what is the problem then? Let's think about that. The problem is, I guess, if I correct me if I'm wrong, I give you, let's take a look at one of the examples here, perhaps. That's what I would do, the trip. Says here you've got somebody has paid $15.00. Somebody else has 15.01, 3.01. We want to normalize their money so that everybody, so these people have each paid this much in expenses. We want to at the end make it so that they all have spent as equal an amount of money as possible, while we minimize the amount of money that flows from one hand to another. Okay? So let's think about this thing. What is the amount of money that it will take for them to be equal in this particular example? Okay? What is the desired amount of money for each person to have?
$9,
well, why is that? That's 9. It's 6 plus 30. 36 divided by 4 is about 9. So in the end, we want them to end up with 9 plus 2 people, it looks like, you have to end up with an extra penny, right? The question is, how can we arrange it so that they all end up with, the two of the people, I don't know which two, let's say, without loss of generality, let's say, just say for, as a guess, these two people end up with the 1. How can we minimize the amount of money that has to change hands in order to make this happen? This guy is going to give 6, he has to get rid of $6, right? If he gets rid of $6, he's got to give it to some other people. This person needs 6, this person needs 6, right? So one thing that we could do is have this guy give $6 to him and have this person give $6 to them. That would be a total of $12 that has changed hands. Is that clear? Is that the smallest amount of money that can change hands while making everybody equal? Not according to the output here. How can we minimize the amount of money that changes hands while somebody gets even? Yeah?
Well, people who have more than $9, like that's a bit $1, they should pay $9.01 each.
So you're saying that you want these guys to keep the extra, you want to instead make it. And if we do it this way, now this guy only is going to give $5.99. Right? Somebody see that? So if we do it this way, now only $11.99 changes hands. Okay? And the purpose of your problem is to try to figure out who should end up with the extra money. And one thing that you know, what is the smallest amount of money movement that has to happen to make everybody equal to within a penny. And I think the critical issue here is who ends up with the extra penny. Okay? One idea might be that seems natural, maybe the rich, the people who started out with paying the most should end up with, you know, staying high. Okay? But that may or may not be right. That has to be thought about. Any questions? Okay, yeah. Okay, so let's put it this way. Let's say that you guys were trying to get together. Let's say that instead you guys were trying to get together, four of you were trying to get together to buy a copy of the final version of my algorithm book. Okay, which let's say you would buy it, it's going to cost you $36.10. Okay? Let's say that the way that you did this is one guy kicked in $15.
one guy kicked in 1501, one guy made 3, one guy had 301. Now you have enough money to buy the book. Okay, that makes me happy. But these people are going to be unhappy. Why? Because they made more for the book than they should. So somehow, money has to flow from these guys to make it fair. Money has to flow from these guys to those guys so that they all spend this, you know, they're each going to get one quarter share of the book. How should we have the money flow from these guys to those guys so that in the end everybody can say they paid an equal amount? Okay? You imagine maybe this day, you know, the four people deciding if they only want to buy Skeeter's book. And someone said, well, look, I only have $3. Okay? Well, I only have $3.01. Okay, well, they got together and did it this way. But you can bet that these guys are going to want more money back later from these guys when they have more, you know. So this is basically saying, how do we average out the expenses so they all made it equal? Any questions? Okay? Very good. I still have a couple extra copies of the book if people need to buy one. If not, think about it, and we'll talk about things in the next class. Okay? And then next class, we're going to move on to chapter 2. So finish up these problems as best you can. We'll talk about it a little bit, and then we're going to move to chapter 2's problem. Okay, thank you. What? Yeah.
I don't think
that's what
we'll
be doing. That's the publishing business. Okay, let me take a look. Hold on. Let me just fire this. Stop. Hold on one second here. Stop.